You're now listening to a Cape Talk live studio audience.
Join the conversation.
And it is a very warm welcome to the live studio audience members who are with us in studio today, as well as those listening at home. The whole second hour of the show given over to a conversation about vaping and teenagers. You might have heard the stories late last year of how a survey conducted in local high schools was suggesting that the use of electronic cigarettes has not just skyrocketed, but perhaps reached epidemic proportions, certainly in some schools. And today we want to talk about why that is and where the teens are getting them and what's inside them and why their use is something to worry about. And I want to just preface the whole conversation with a comment that I know that for at least some of our listeners, vaping has been a useful tool that you've used to help you quit smoking. And I want to acknowledge that, but also to say that that is not what we're going to be talking about today. Among the questions that were sent in advance were several to do with vaping as a tool for quitting smoking, the issue of illicit tobacco products, the economic impact of the new smoking laws, etc. And those are all valid talking points, but we're not going to be talking about them today. I just wanted to clarify that up front. We are sticking very strictly to the issue of how and why teenagers are vaping and the impact of that behavior on their health. So thanks in advance for understanding that. With that said, you are welcome to ask more questions on 072-567-1567 if you'd like to send a voice note, or by calling us on 021-446 6-0-5-6-7. Now with me in studio is the man who ran that survey last year on the vaping in high schools issue, Professor Richard van Zyl-Smit, who is a consultant pulmonologist at UCT and at Groote-Schuur Hospital, and has spent a lot of his time of late talking to high school students and to their teachers and to their parents, this parent among them, by the way, about when and where and how much kids are vaping and the big question of why. And Richard, it's great to have you with us, and I have to say a special thank you because I know it is literally on the cusp of the start of your sabbatical. You probably would rather be heading for the beach right now. Thanks for making time today.
Thanks for having me, Papa. Yeah, no, actually, my sabbatical is going to spend some time dealing with vaping. So okay. Beach will wait till next week.
Fair enough.
More than happy to be here.
Thank you. And thank you, too, to Helen Malkas, who is a counseling psychologist working with an organization called Students for a Better Future. She is with us primarily to talk about the issue of why they are making the choice to vape. And her organization is all about helping teenagers make better choices on the road to adulthood. Helen, looking forward to your insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Papa. Good to be here.
And then we'll have a guest joining us after 2:30 or so for an update on the current legislation and the changes that are pending around how our laws in South Africa govern tobacco products and the issue of teens using them. So more on that a little bit later. Richard, the first thing is to ask whether all vapes are equal, because there are actually several different types of devices that fall into in that category, aren't there?
Yeah, so Pippa, the short answer is yes and no, and the long answer is also yes and no. The biggest challenge we have is that it's unregulated. So all cigarettes aren't equal. All cigarettes are bad. All vaping devices aren't equal. All vaping devices are potentially harmful. And so how much nicotine is in it, the different chemicals, the different flavorants all impact on their potential harm. So they aren't all the same. But if we're talking about vaping, any vaping compared to fresh air is of concern. And so people always ask me, is it safer than, not safer than? It's worse than fresh air, and that's really my starting point.
Yeah. So of course it might not be as bad as a traditional cigarette, but as you say, what are you actually comparing it to? The gold standard is nothing at all. I mean, where are the kids getting their hands on them? You mentioned unregulated, and obviously that's something that they're trying to close those legal loopholes. Right now, can a 16-year-old walk into a cafe and buy them over the counter?
So there's sort of an unwritten rule, or unwritten but spoken, no under 18s. And if you talk to the vaping industry, they will say no under 18s. You can go into your local cafe and you can buy them. You can go onto your favorite internet shop and you can buy them. So there is no restriction apart from the it shouldn't be for under 18. Unlike tobacco, that if you go in and look young, the person behind the counter should say no.
Should say, doesn't always, yeah.
For vaping online, any cafe, any corner store, you can get them anywhere you want.
At something of a price tag, though, Richard, is this a problem that you're seeing predominantly in more affluent schools? Because to buy a vaping device is not a cheap exercise.
So again, yes and no. There are disposable vaping devices, like there are illegal cigarettes. So you can pay premium if you go to a fancy shopping mall, you'll get the premium ones. You can buy cheap, nasty ones at your cafe. Our survey is only in its pilot phase, and we've only looked at high-income schools. We started with high-income because that's where we thought the problem was likely to be the worst. We are going to and are planning to this year try and get to rural and lower-income schools. But you are correct that it is likely to be a wealthy problem, given that they are traditionally more expensive than tobacco cigarettes.
So pilot phase, yes, but how many schools, how many youngsters did you speak to over the course of that pilot?
We've got 12 high schools included and 6,500 learners.
And how many of those 6,500 admitted they were using them, Richard?
I think a lot less than actually were. With surveys, you always underestimate. No one, I think, lied that they were when they weren't, but clearly there was a whole bunch that weren't, that didn't necessarily own up to it. And it very much depends on which grade you're looking at. So 8 or 9% in some schools in the grade eights. Some high schools, it's over 30-35% in matrics. So it very much depends. I think it equates to about 15%. But again, that's not really reflective. It's 30-something in matrics and 8-something in grade eight. So the average is kind of not that high. But in some sectors, it's crazy.
It's really worrying. And it's not necessarily only in high school. Somebody just WhatsApping to say, what about the kids who are using them in primary school? Your survey was only in high schools. But Richard, anecdotally, are you aware of kids using them younger than that?
Yeah. So we specifically started and actually got ethics approval to do only high schools. Okay. I've had a couple of junior schools ask me to come and talk to their grade sevens. So we've actually changed to include grade sevens.
Okay.
I've heard stories of grade fives. But again, if you think of tobacco cigarettes, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old is not an unheard of time to start smoking cigarettes. Wow. So I suspect we'd see the same with vaping. But I think it's predominantly a high school issue. But yes, junior schools. And I said, I have been asked to talk to junior schools as well.
And I saw Helen nodding at that comment. Helen, from what you're observing and hearing in the line of your work, would you agree that it is happening younger and younger?
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, young people are always on the lookout for ways to alleviate stress in some way. But also, I think the impact of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. I think that as young people are watching their peers engaging in this kind of behavior, that obviously sets them off to want to try. Because adolescence is the developmental age where young people experiment, but more importantly, where their peer group becomes the most important reference point for them.
Yeah. And of course, we all know the feeling of wanting to rebel and of wanting to look cool is something that can make a lot of us make bad decisions. Sure. We're going to come back to the issue of why they're doing it and that stress alleviation factor. It's a very important part of this conversation. But before we leave the physical behind, Richard, let's talk a little bit. I mean, vaping hasn't been around long enough for us to have any long-term studies on the impact on the lungs, for example, as we do now have for traditional cigarettes. But what do we know, if anything, about what it is doing to the lungs?
So, Pippa, there are two elements to it. One is the nicotine part, which is the addiction and where we really worried about the adolescent side. From the other components, we have propylene glycol, which is the same stuff that you see in theaters, the theater smoke. You breathe enough of that and your lungs aren't going to be happy. And then the flavorants, interestingly, certain flavorants can cause quite significant damage to the lungs. Now, you know, cherry and cinnamon don't exist in a tobacco cigarette. And cinnamon and cherry you can eat, but heated and breathed in, there are several studies, some laboratory and some real-world studies, showing that those particular chemicals can damage things like the lining of your lung, can damage things like the lining of your blood vessels. And so again, the argument about is it safe compared to nothing, the answer is no. Is it as bad as tobacco? Probably not. But from a health point of view, breathing in anything more than fresh air is a concern. And we took us 50, 60 years before we realized that tobacco was a problem. And so those of us in respiratory health have been criticized for being a little bit harsh and party poopers by saying don't, but we've seen it once and I don't think any of us are prepared to wait 50 years and go, oops, sorry, actually,
we should have spoken up sooner. Yeah. Just for those who've joined us late to the conversation, Professor Richard Funsell-Smit is the voice you're currently listening to. He is a pulmonologist who specializes in respiratory diseases, but a fascination with the subject of vaping and doing important research into teenagers and vaping. Now, Richard, when I came to your talk at one of my kids' schools, as a parent, the thing that really horrified me the most was what you told us about the impact of nicotine on the teenage brain. And setting aside the actual physical impact on the lungs for a minute, what's really concerning is the thought of teens using nicotine regularly and in higher doses than they would get from having the odd quick ciggy behind the shed at break time. Can you explain for those who haven't heard one of your talks before why we should be worried?
So there are two elements to that. The one is a fancy neurological term called neurobiological plasticity, which is why your teenager can learn to play the piano or do anything better than you can as an adult, and why they learn so fast is their brains are laying down pathways and learning. That's part of being an adolescent. Nicotine is a neuropsychiatric drug in that it gets into the brain and impacts on brain function. And part of its problem is that it rewires. And so the concerns are primarily an upfront performance, that if you take enough nicotine, your ability to function at school, homework, learning is impaired. But also there are studies and concerns about long-term impact, that if you start nicotine as an adolescent, by the time you hit university and beyond, things like depression, drug abuse, and other mental illnesses come into play. And so there's the acute concern, but also the long-term potential damage to your brain. And again, I mean, you made the point when we were at school, I'm assuming you're more or less my age, it was behind the shed with a quick cigarette. The adolescents are consuming huge amounts of nicotine on a daily basis during school, in class. I've even heard of in chapel and anywhere you can. And so the exposure to nicotine, we've never seen this before. And so it's not the same as when we were younger and you smoked a few cigarettes. This is a different level of exposure, which really raises concerns. And again, if I'm wrong, well, sorry, if I'm right and if the researchers are right and there is this concern, then in 10 or 15 years' time, we're going to have a whole bunch of adults that have significant mental health issues that we could have avoided.
Sure, that's a sobering thought. Somebody asking about long-term impacts. I mean, you've mentioned we just don't know precisely what they could be, but let's talk about the impact of addiction itself. Nicotine's a highly addictive substance. Are you at all seeing teens who are getting hooked on it through their vapes and are then looking for different ways of getting it or getting more of it? We've often heard about the concept of a gateway. Is vaping a gateway to something else?
So the gateway theory of if I start with nicotine as a vaping device, I'm then going to go on to tobacco cigarettes, and then I'm going to go on to cannabis, and then I'm going to go on to heroin, cocaine, has been around for a while. Huge arguments in both directions. There's enough data to show that, particularly coming out of the US, that vaping does seem to lead to more tobacco smoking. Whether that's a direct function or not, whether you were always going to smoke cigarettes and just started vaping, is unclear. It is something we worry about. Our data is too early. We're only at high school, so I haven't seen enough time yet with these adolescents. Colleagues of mine at MRC are looking at university students who are vaping and tobacco smoking, and that's probably the time where we can answer that question. But, you know, 15, 16, if you start vaping or smoking, it's too early. But there's concern, but it's not as robust as if you start vaping, you will. But the risks are high enough for us to be worried.
Okay. Somebody asking a really important question about influence and advertising here. You've mentioned, and Helen has mentioned, the role of peer pressure and experimentation and rebellion, etc. This person says, I've never seen an advert for vaping come across my Instagram feed, but my teenagers are constantly bombarded with it in their feeds. Is there no way to control this? That's a very interesting, obviously it speaks to the manipulability of the advertising strategy, doesn't it, Richard? I know it's something you're very concerned about.
Yeah, so I'm sure Peter will jump in later. later on this, and there are very strong regulations around cigarettes. So you may not directly advertise cigarettes, but if you show someone on TikTok vaping, you're not advertising vaping, you're just showing someone vaping. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that kind of sort of subliminal situational advertising. Again, it's not regulated, so in the laws will bring that in, that you can't advertise. Yeah. But it's peer-to-peer. It's within the groups. The group that are targeting adolescents are not necessarily targeting the adults. And we saw in the US, Juul, who's now got a couple of $100 million lawsuit against them, they specifically, although they deny it, put a whole bunch of young people on their adverts. No one with wrinkles or gray hair. It was all young youth. And so there is a target market.
It's very similar for those of us old enough to remember the days when traditional cigarettes were advertised on television and at the movies. It's a very similar feel of advertising pitch, isn't it, Richard?
It's exactly the same. You can, if you look at the advert, certainly for the adults, it's the same sexy clad models, the hunky men. It's the standard tobacco
the
tactics.
Books, the yeah.
Make it but for cool. The adolescents, it's more subtle. It's more showing someone blowing smoke tricks, vape tricks, and so it looks good rather than the direct, you must use this. It's sort of situational targeted advertising, I think, which is very different. We didn't have TikTok and Instagram and all of that when we were growing up with cigarettes. I'm sure we would have seen the same thing then.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a short break for the news headlines, and then the conversation is going to continue around teenagers and vaping. We're going to look at the legal status and the changing legal status around how these delivery devices are managed by the law. And then we're going to have a more in-depth conversation about the role of stress alleviation and why teens are choosing to vape and what we can offer them as a better alternative.
K-Talk.
Bringing you all the conversation
in front of our live studio audience.
And yeah, interestingly, a member of the live studio audience just pointed out anecdotally that in their experience, that figure of 30% of matrix vaping is probably a way underestimate. And Richard, you don't look the slightest bit surprised at that comment.
No, I mean, it's everyone I've spoken to says it's much higher. I mean, 30% is higher than we've seen in any other international studies. But yeah, it must be higher. But even if it is 30%, that's enough to be worried about. Yeah.
So just for the sake of those who might have tuned in late, we have a live studio audience of listeners in studio, listening to my two guests in studio, and a third I'll introduce in just a second. With us in studio, Professor Richard Funsell-Smit, who is a consultant pulmonologist, very involved in the study of vaping and teens in South Africa. He has been involved in the pilot project survey, which has been looking at higher income high schools in the last year or so. That is hopefully soon to be expanded into a wider pool, but already they've had engagement with several thousand high school students about who is vaping, how much, when, and why. The why is something we're going to delve into next with Helen Malchus, who is a counselling psychologist working for an organisation called Students for a Better Future. As the name implies, they're all about helping them make better choices. And one thing we'll talk about is the choice of what you do to manage your stress. Before we do any of that, though, let's bring in Peter Rocco, who is listening on the line, CEO of TAG, which stands for the Tobacco, Alcohol and Gambling Advisory Advocacy and Action Group. It's a mouthful, but as the name implies, they are involved in campaigning to protect society against the harms caused by addictive behaviours of one kind or another. And in this particular case, Peter, thank you for joining us to talk about what is changing in the regulation of electronic cigarettes. Great to have you on the show.
My pleasure. Hi, Pippa.
Hi.
Well, what's changing in the regulation or the legislation is that the current Act doesn't include any of these electronic devices under the definition of tobacco products, so there's no control. The bill, which was published and is now going through the parliamentary process and public hearings, seeks to include all these electronic devices under the definition of tobacco products. So they'll be subject to bans of use in public places. And by the way, many businesses already ban them because they know it's bad for business, because nobody wants all that smoke around.
Yep.
And there'll be health warnings, there'll be tax implications along the same lines as tobacco products, and that's the legal position. But I don't really want to talk about the whole legal position, because that's what's on the legislative diary and will become a legislative products of South Africa and be on the books. What's more important is what we're talking about, and that's vaping. And you've said the word probably 50 times in the last half an hour, and Richard and others have said vaping. And that sounds nice. We're talking about vaping. It's a wonderful sounding thing. And when we talk about vapor, we really think generally about water vapor. And this is not what comes out of the electronic devices. Vaping is a term created by the industry because it sounds nice, Pippa. If I met you in the streets of Cape Town, I said, oh, hello, Pippa, do you vape? What flavors do you vape? Oh, Pippa, let's pop into a restaurant and we'll have a cup of coffee and we'll vape, shall we? But that sounds nice and it sounds romantic, but it's not. It's hateful. It's harmful. The experts have already told you. Professor Van Zyl-Smit has told you. All sorts of diseases, lung cancers, COPD. You can use these products and think they're nice, and one day you're old and walking around and going, and you can't breathe because you're carrying oxygen around with you. So let's first of all get rid of the term vaping. These are electronic devices, electronic nicotine delivery systems, and some of them don't have nicotine. But by the way, lots of research indicates that those devices that say they don't have nicotine actually do have nicotine. So they're all addictive, and it's habit-forming. And vapor, you know, when we talk about little bits of water vapor, that's not what comes out of these devices.
Yeah.
Huge plumes of dense, toxic smoke is what comes out of these devices. Technically, we call them aerosols. And they contain dozens of poisonous chemicals, toxins, and cancer-causing agents, in addition to the addictive nicotine. So they're harmful, they're horrible, they're hateful. And what I would say to the teens who are busy surveying now is, hey, get smart. Don't start. And if you do vape, see, vape, there it came out again because we think it's nice. If you do use those infernal electronic devices, get smart. Stop using them. That's the simple message, Pippa. It doesn't matter what the law says. The law will call them tobacco products. We'll have health warnings. Advertising will be banned. Levels of nicotine will be regulated. Tax will be implemented. That's the law. But let's be clear.
Peter, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I hear so loud and clear what you're saying about stop using the sort of the palatable term to make it sound more acceptable socially than it is. Before we say goodbye, as you've mentioned, I mean, we're quite far advanced in the legislative framework to change this. The bill has passed through many layers of tick boxes needed, and it's quite close to being implemented. Are we going to be in line with what the rest of the international community is doing, Peter? I know you've looked at what other countries have done to tackle this particular scourge. Are we going to be unusual in the scope of that legislation or merely falling into what others are doing?
No, we're going to fall into what many are doing, but we're not going to fall into what quite a number of places are doing, and that's ban the devices totally. The law, by the way, is never going to, as it does with cigarettes, ban the use of them. That is unlikely. Cigarettes you can only buy over the age of 18. But there's no law against you using or smoking cigarettes if you're 16. Otherwise, we'd have 14-year-old and 12-year-old criminals who smoke and are addicted to nicotine by using combustible cigarettes. The law's not going to make that a crime. But what the law's going to do is make it more difficult to buy them and more difficult to use them. And what's happened around many places in the world is that the devices have been totally banned. And that's where I think South Africa should head. A total ban of all the devices. Ooh, I hear people saying, but what about jobs? Because we've got lots of shops and all sorts of things. Jobs is not the issue. You know, we can talk about jobs. What about fax machines? They don't exist anymore. So all the people who made them and repaired them don't exist. The tape recorders, all those, we can talk about dozens of those things. Those jobs might have disappeared, but they were created, recreated new jobs in other areas. So let's not talk about jobs and that kind of problem that the law purportedly might create. Let's talk about health.
Peter Ucker, thank you so much for those comments. Speaking to us, the CEO of the Tobacco, Alcohol and Gambling Advisory Advocacy and Action Group. Richard, obviously, Peter feels very strongly about the use of these devices. Let's come back to specifically the use of these devices by teenagers and bring in Helen Malchus as well with the psychologist's perspective. I mean, Helen, what Peter was saying there, you know, trying to make it just say no, don't start. If you've started already, stop. These are phrases we've heard applied to everything from cigarette smoking to drug use for many, many decades. And we all know that you can say them till you're blue in the face. Your average teenager isn't necessarily going to hear them and listen, are they?
No, Papa, because the adolescents, by their very nature, are quite impulsive. And their brains, I mean, a fully developed brain only happens by the age of 25. So these young people, you know, their decision-making ability is quite, not, I wouldn't say impaired, but it's vulnerable. And as I've been listening to Richard, I was just struck by how vulnerable adolescents are and how I almost feel that, you know, social media almost preys on them in some way at an age when they are vulnerable. And so it really is hard to say no when all around on social media I'm seeing these really cool tricks that people are doing with vapes. I'm hearing about the head rush that you get. And so I'm going like, ooh, I want to try that too. And so it is really hard to just say no. I mean, I've heard at my school where my kids go, I mean, where it's a junior school and high school all on one campus. I mean, kids are smoking in the bathroom and exposing younger kids to that.
Yeah.
So it's really hard. And the social pressure, I think, that adolescents are under is enormous. I mean, I can remember when I was a teen. I mean, to want to be cool, to want to fit in, to want to experience what others are experiencing. That's just enormous. And I think the voice of adults, you know, are much less important than the voice of peers.
The risk, of course, is one teen might take a try and go, it's not for me, I can put it aside and move on. We never know which teen is going to be the teen for whom one or two hits of nicotine is a gateway into a lifelong struggle with an addiction, do we know, Helen? We just don't know who is going to be predisposed to that.
We just don't know, Papa. And I think, you know, you don't know what is in your history in terms of a predisposition to addiction, a predisposition to psychosis. And so sometimes it just takes one puff and that addiction hits. We spoke earlier about vaping being a gateway to other substances. I think if adolescents start with vaping, who's to say that, you know, dacha is the next substance that they try? And we know that, you know, cannabis-induced psychosis, it's real. And I've seen in my work 18-year-olds presenting with, you know, psychotic features out of nowhere. So we just don't know.
So you gamble with your life effectively if you decide to take the risk. And as you've said so eloquently, Helen, it's a time of risk taking across the boards. Richard, just to circle back to you, when you were doing the survey, the issue of stress came up a lot of the time as a reason why you vape. And I know some people will poo-poo that and say, they're just doing it to be rebellious. They use them because they've been told not to. But it was more than that. I mean, you heard time and time again that these kids are using the device to deal with stress.
Yeah, so I think, Papa, there are two elements. One is we ask them, why do you? And stress, addiction, coping, anxiety came out very, very strongly. I think it's different. I'm convinced it's different from the smoking your cigarette behind the bicycle shed. The other thing that came out quite strongly is we asked them, can you stop or have you tried to stop? And many of the adolescents, high schoolers who are using these devices have tried and just can't.
Wow.
And are showing signs of quite significant addiction. Can't get to school having to vape before you get to school, within 5 minutes of waking up. Those are huge alarm bells in the tobacco world. If you smoke your first cigarette within 5 minutes, you're seriously addicted. We're seeing the same thing. So I think to cope, yes, is a start, but very quickly and easily hooked on, and so not so easy to get off from an addiction point of view, but also having not dealt with the stress and the anxiety that got you there in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's a double trouble, as it were.
I mean, Helen, would you like to elaborate from a psychologist's perspective there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because with addiction, we often see the comorbidity of another psychological disorder. So from what I'm hearing, and Richard, from what your study seems to suggest, is that there may be an underlying anxiety which has not been dealt with. And so the smoking or vaping may seem like it's a quick fix, but it's actually not solving the problem of the underlying anxiety. And I think that's where parents in particular need to be vigilant around knowing their children and thinking about what are the other measures that they need to put in place. I think the one big thing about addiction, and this is a very interesting quote that I heard, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it is connection. And I found that quite amazing in thinking about addiction, because it speaks to the fact that it's about the quality of my relationships that's going to make a difference in my life. And so, you know, when I think about adolescents and I think about their need for connection, adolescents are notoriously difficult. So I'm the mother of a 14-year-old, and they will push you away and push you away, but they actually need you to step in. And so my word to parents out there is that you need to be keeping your children safe. And as much as, you know, vaping, you can afford it, and it, you know, there's the glamour, it's about keeping your child safe. And sometimes you need to step in and actually be the one saying, no, and I'm laying down the boundary.
When you talk about picking it up as a stress mechanism for coping with stress, obviously your immediate response is, okay, well, what can we offer them as an alternative? Sure. And unfortunately, many of the alternatives are equally bad for you, like alcohol, and gaming, etc. Helen, what advice would you offer to a parent who wants to be proactive and constructive and say, I can see you struggling, I can see you feeling anxiety, let's find something to help you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, you know, many of the schools that we're talking about are schools that are fairly well resourced. And so at schools, there would be counseling departments, which young people can reach out to. If you can afford private counseling, I would say, you know, go for that. But obviously, there are just basic things like exercise, getting out there and making sure that you're exercising regularly. I mean, that has enormous effects on your sense of well-being, but also your psychological and emotional health. And then to encourage a sense of balance. I think that, you know, many of the schools that Richard has surveyed are really top academic schools where there's lots of stress and lots of pressure. And young people often need to maintain a sense of balance. I think the other thing is around just co-regulation. So it's about coming alongside your child, noticing when things are not going well and stepping in. My son spends hours in his room listening to music, and sometimes I think that's a good thing. But, you know, you also need to come out and just be part of the family and connect. Because like that quote said, you know, the opposite of addiction is connection. And we all have an innate need for connection and for belonging. And on the one hand, I think vaping offers a sense of belonging, but we need to offer an alternative sense of belonging for our young people.
Richard, I'm sitting here thinking back to my school days and thinking of my kids' school days, and one of the tribes in a school that a lot of kids look up to and want to be like are the big sportsmen. It's the first team rugby and cricket and the rowers, etc. I mean, particularly given that this is a habit that has potential physical consequences, is there a case to be made for getting those kids to sort of be the leaders in saying, we won't do it, we're not prepared to risk impacting our sporting performance? Or is that a bit of a pipe dream on my part?
You would think so. I hear rumors on the ground that they are some of the biggest culprits in terms of vaping in the change rooms before going on, getting that head rush, getting psyched up. So I'm not sure that they are necessarily the
ambassadors.
The ambassadors. But yes, I mean, that's one area where if you are playing clean sport, they are the ones that should be leading. But I'm not sure that that's going to be the group that's necessarily going to do it.
But I do think if we can find peers who are adopting pro-social behavior, you know, like not vaping and taking a stand against it, I think those are the voices that adolescents will listen to.
Yeah,
they'll far more listen to a peer than listen to, you know, professor of pulmonology.
Yeah.
Because in the world of the adolescent, my peers carry so much weight. So I think, you know, with this group, to get peers involved, I think is really key. And so I think schools, you know, where they are, I mean, I don't know what all these societies are, but if there are those groups, I would advocate that those are the places where we can start spreading the word about different ways and healthier ways of coping. Mm.
And being encouraged to really take that stand, yeah. Because as you said, they don't want to hear it from mom, they don't want to hear it from auntie. They might listen if it comes from somebody who's in the circle that they want to fit in with. I hear you. Somebody asking Richard about the frequency of use. Does a child who vapes now and again in a social environment face the same risks as the one who is buying vapes and using them regularly?
So with all of these, with all of these things, it's a dose response curve. I don't know that there's a safe level, but yeah, I mean, in reality, if you smoked or vaped once or twice in your life and you didn't have any other predisposing medical conditions, you probably would be fine. It doesn't mean to say it's a good idea, but the more you use is obviously worse. On an individual basis, and we talked about susceptibility, I mean, you see that with tobacco smoking. I have always, there's someone whose granny's 95, who's smoked 300 cigarettes a day and can still run the Comrades Marathon. Well, good for them, but on average, not. So I think, yes, I mean, I don't want to be too draconian to say that absolutely no one ever should touch the things. I mean, ideally not, but once or twice is unlikely to cause trouble, unfortunately, except in those that it does. And the less is better than lots. But none is always, unfortunately, the best.
Mm. And again, to say what you've just said, you never know whether you are going to be the one for whom one is all it takes to cause a major, major problem versus the person who is lucky enough to win the genetic lottery or whatever it may be.
But we do know in terms of nicotine and adolescence that they are more likely. So if you start vaping at 10 or 12, you are more likely to become addicted than if you do at age 20 or 30 just because of your brain development phase. Mm. And vaping, the nicotine in some of these devices has been altered to make it much easier absorbed, which also increases your risk for addiction. So, yeah, adolescent brain is a special thing, but it has risks.
Okay.
And I think what was interesting in thinking about this was the long-term cognitive effects. And I think these are effects that we don't see. And the problem when you don't see something, you don't think that it's real. But the long-term effects of, you know, negative impact on your academic ability, negative impact on your memory, concentration, you don't see that. And I think that's one of the things about vaping is that, and any substance abuse, you don't see the effects. Unlike if you break your arm, you know, you'll see, it's there, I can see the damage. But this invisibility, I think, means that we don't take cognizance of the long term.
You're not necessarily going to know the extent until it's too late to do anything about it. Yeah. Mm. So with one eye on the clock, we've only got a couple of minutes left. The one thing we haven't spoken about is how to help the teen who is already vaping. And I feel like we shouldn't leave that out. Richard, as I said, that I thought if it was a smoker, you would say, well, try and wean yourself off onto something else, or there are all kinds of treatment options out there. What's available for somebody who wants to quit vaping?
So from an adult point of view, the same approach would be with nicotine replacement therapy or any of the other drugs like varenicline or bupropion. We would use the same approach. Under 18, none of the drugs that we use for smoking cessation are available. They're not licensed, so we would use them off-label. I would argue, though, that more important than dealing with the vaping is dealing with the mental side. I need you to be able to cope with school without the vape as a starting point. And then let's deal with the addiction side. So it's not just about slapping on a patch and saying, go cope at school. Mm. I need you to have the skills to manage the next 3 or 4 years at school with all the pressures, because it's not going to change. You stop vaping today, school's going to be the same. Can we give you the skills? And that's where the psychologists and the behavioral intervention and coping skills and resilience, all that comes in. And if you have serious withdrawal, then yes, simply just cutting back, vaping less and less and less, or a nicotine patch or any of the other medications may be an option. No one in South Africa has any experience with that in adolescence. Mm. It's off-label, but doesn't mean we can't. But it's a tricky space and something we're looking at to try and say how best do we do that and write some guidelines and create some resources for the general practitioner in a different town who has an adolescent who's addicted to nicotine, what actually to do. We don't really have those guidelines yet. But it's not all about the vaping. It's the behavior first and then manage the vaping.
And I'm wondering, Richard, if there is an underlying psychological condition like anxiety and depression, if one could get that diagnosed and treat that and then, deal with the physiological effects of addiction. Because it feels to me like often the reason that people start vaping is because of anxiety and maybe depression. And so if you can get a handle on that with psychotherapy, maybe psychotropic medication, and then deal with the addiction.
So treat the cause rather than the symptom.
That's what
in
I
other
would
words,
say.
Yeah. You've both been so, so helpful. And I hope our listeners, both in studio and listening at home, have found the information both helpful and accessible. I want to thank both of you for your time today. You've been listening to Professor Richard Funsell-Smit and to Helen Malchus of Students for a Better Future. Thank you both so much for your time and for your advice to our listeners today. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Bipper.